Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for the podcast version of Trey's Variety Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello, this is Doug Key, and this is Trey Ratcliffe's Variety Hour. The only thing is, we're missing Trey Ratcliffe. He was with us until just a moment ago, but he's having a very difficult time, being that he's in the British Virgin Islands with his family and who knows who else. There he is. Hey, Trey. Trey's going to be in and out for most of the evening.
Hello. Can you hear me okay now?
We hear you. So we're underway. How you doing, Trey? All right. We're not going to count on Trey. He's going to jump in when he can.
Well, I think
he's doing good.
It's not very good. He's up. Okay.
Trey
brought down a bunch of the people from Second Customs.
He's getting eaten by the Matrix right now.
Trey just said, I'm in a hammock and I'm having a great time.
I think what we've discovered is that Trey is clearly consuming way too much rum in the British Virgin Islands. Hello, Derek. How are you?
I just muted you, Derek, because
Derek's a little noisy there. So we have an amazing show today. Trey asked me to fill in for him because he's in Virgin Gorda, and the bandwidth there is flaky, as we can see. I've got a terrific panel of guests. I want to tell you what we're going to be talking about tonight, and then we're going to introduce everybody. I've picked a rather challenging subject, I think, but we have the people with the expertise that can handle it. What I want to do is not talk about gear or anything like that, but I want to focus on how people learn and improve their photography. And we're going to talk about everything from books and ebooks to workshops, camera clubs, online video, the works. I have no idea where we're going with this, but we'll find out. We certainly have the experts. Let's start on my left, Mr. Colby Brown. Why don't you tell us just quickly who you are? Although most people probably know us. Is that you, Frederick, crackling again?
Yeah, Frederick, you're crackling.
All right, you're crackling. All right, Colby, say hi to you and tell us just briefly who you are and what you do.
Thanks, Doug. My name's Colby Brown. I'm a landscape travel and humanitarian photographer from Denver, Colorado. I'm also the founder and owner of Giving Lens, which coincidentally is actually a photo education company that works on supporting sustainable development initiatives in third world countries. Happy to be here and stoked about the conversation.
Thank you, Colby. And Mr. Derek Story, introduce yourself. Derek is muted. Derek, you have to unmute yourself, I think. You're going to have to find the unmute button.
The top right of the hangout.
The top right. If not. All right. Derek, we'll come back to you. At least on my screen next to me that way, or is it that way? I can't tell. From Kelby Training and everywhere else, Mr. Matt Kluskowski. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So my name is Matt. I work over at Kelby Media Group. I teach Photoshop, photography, Lightroom, pretty much anything in the whole digital imaging realm.
Mr. Everywhere, from books to videos, one of the most faces we've seen most all over the net, I think. Thanks.
I feel sorry for you then.
Derek, is your audio working yet?
I think it is.
All right. Tell us who you are.
I run a site called The Digital Story, and I write for Macworld Magazine, and I have been a professional photographer for longer than I care to admit. And I just love I love teaching photography. I love looking at photography, and I really love shooting pictures.
Derek, did you start with a speed graphic?
Not quite that. I'm not quite as old as you, Doug. My very first serious camera though was an Argus C3. So that bad boy is in a museum somewhere.
Right. And for those who don't know what that camera is, that means you're just not old enough. And next is Ms. Nicole Young. Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Who are you?
My name is Nicole. No, Nicole Young. I go by Nicole Z on the interwebs. I am a photographer. I do a lot of stock and food photography. And I also write how-to books on photography, books on cameras, and I just wrote one on the food photography with Peach Pit late last year. So I'm still at the whole writing thing. I've been doing a lot of that lately and a lot more to come, trying to squeeze in photography when I can.
Excellent. And you've left Utah for the Northwest.
Yeah, I live in Seattle.
Yeah, all right. All right, and next we have two producers on this show. Next, sitting there live from the Twit studios, is Mr. Tony Wang. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Doug. I'm Tony from Twit, and I'm a producer and editor here.
And if you're watching us on the live.twit.tv site, that's thanks to Tony. And next is the show producer, Mr. Dave Veffer. Hey, Dave.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dave Veffer. I am a person who likes things. And you can find my profile at plusdave.com.
All right. And way over there in the corner, in his hammock, with we know way too much from, is the one and only Mr. Trey Ratcliffe. Who are you, Trey?
Hey, Doug. Hello, everybody. Thanks again, Doug, for hosting this in my time of bandwidth woe. I don't like this. You know, I'm always appreciative of good bandwidth when I have it, but when you don't have it, you think, oh, God, it's the worst. But anyway, if you guys missed a few weeks ago, we had a guest host cage match, and Doug emerged victorious. Actually, they were all victors. And Nicole was one of the cage matchers. She's going to host one of these upcoming when I'm not available. But we do like to keep it regular every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific. You know, new topics every week and new guests and keep things fluctuating. And I'm really excited about the topic tonight. I think it'll be great. I think it'll be super helpful. And Doug, since you went through all the trouble of putting together the topic and all these guests, I'm really happy for you to host this thing. And you can kind of pass around the talking pillow and I'll just be sort of another guest. If my bandwidth keeps up here, I'm happy to pipe in on occasion and say some things, but I'm really excited to hear from everyone else, and I hope the audience really gets a lot out of it. I'm pretty sure they will. So thanks again, Doug.
Very good. And I think, you know, this is a very a panel of people here who are very modest. I mean, we have some extraordinary photographers, people who are very involved with photo education. And hopefully over the next hour, you get to know them and some of the things they've done. So I'm not even sure how to start this off. I'm sure once we get going, it'll work out. But, you know, I'm going to start with Matt. Because, Matt, I think you may be one of the people who's involved with more of the different ways that people learn photography. Kelby does online videos. You might want to mention the Google Plus conference is coming up. Books. How many books have you written, Matt?
Probably 15, 16.
Yeah, that's getting up there. And, you know, how from your perspective as a producer of educational materials, how do you view the different media and how different photographers react to those different media?
So I'm going to tell you guys something that probably sounds really weird coming from a guy who makes part of his living writing books, and that is, I don't really enjoy learning from books that much. And I enjoy reading books. I enjoy, you know, casual reading, but I've never been one to really learn from books. To me, my favorite has always been video training. Ever since people started doing video training, ever since, you know, I was able to get in front of a camera, that I kind of gravitated toward that because for me, that's kind of how I like to learn, you know. And I think we all do better at whatever we do when we like that aspect of it. Yeah, does that kind of make sense? Where, you know, if I'm going to be a better teacher, I'm going to teach the way that I really like to learn. So me personally, I like to learn watching video. I kind of like books. You know, we publish a lot of books. I like books for photography. It's hard for me to learn software from a book. I have a hard time learning software from, I have a hard time, like, you know, you get that book and you put it on the side here and you've got to go page by page and you've got to, like, you know, you look at that. So for me, I like to just kind of sit back and I'll watch a video and then I'll stop and then I'll go over to whatever the software is. So
Right.
You know, right. Hopefully that kind of kicks it off, as in, you know, to me, video training is the best. If, you know, and probably some of the most approachable. Workshops are great. I love workshops. I love attending workshops. I love hosting workshops, but they're also a little bit more expensive to be able to do. So I think video training is one of the places where everybody can get into.
You know, Matt, it's funny that you started off with that, because I am like the exact same way. I've written three books. One ebook. I'm on my second.
I love reading your books.
But like, you know, like I like to write. I really enjoy writing. I honestly never thought I would be an author, especially a photography author, until, you know, I wrote my first book, I guess. But my favorite style is video, and I think it's just how some of our brains work. You know, how we can barf out certain information a certain way, but we like pull it in a different way. And video to me is it's very independent. You know, you can sit and watch it on your own time. I'm a very visual learner, and so that's the way I absorb information. I have a lot of books, and I get a lot of books. I, you know, also work for the NAPP as like a side job. I do the help desk, so I kind of need some of those books because I'll get a lot of questions on them, and I have to reference them. But I like flipping through them, you know, and kind of gathering ideas from them. But as far as going through an entire process, that's not how I learn. I'm much better with video, and even conferences. I find myself going to Photoshop World, and I barely go to the classes. I hang out at the expo. I do all sorts of stuff. But then I'm like, I went to one class, and I was there like for 3 days. How did that happen?
So, well, let me ask Derek in here, because Derek, you've got a background both in writing. You do videos for lynda.com. You know, how do you see the education of photographers evolving?
Well, you know, I've always been a magazine junkie. I just love magazines. And as a kid, I would just read every magazine article I could get my hands on about photography. And I think part of what I liked about that was that they were short and to the point. They usually focused the scope of the article is usually very focused on a specific technique or something. And then as I've evolved in the teaching part of things, then that's why I also like video training, because you do these short movies on just doing one thing, and the person watching can watch it over and over again until they get it down and then move on to the next thing. Now the way that I learn the most, though, is through teaching. And I think if you really want to learn something inside and out, teach it. And that could be at your local user group. That could be, you know, a special interest group or larger. But whenever you're forced to teach something, you will learn it in ways that you wouldn't otherwise. And then, of course, I learned, I invite all the students to my workshops and stuff under the pretense of teaching them stuff. But I'm actually having them there so I can steal everything they know and then apply it to my own photography. So, just being open to other photographers and what they have to contribute. It's a fantastic way to learn.
Isn't that what Siler did on Heroes? Wasn't he the bad guy?
Yeah,
that exactly. He can suck up the hero powers of all the other heroes.
Yep, but he killed them while he was at it.
Yeah, he cut their brain open.
See, the trick is not to kill them, though, you see. just sort of borrow the knowledge, and then everyone moves along, you see.
That's, it's tough, though, you know? I mean,
yeah.
There's a theme now for Photoshop World is heroes. You know, you can. Never mind. Yeah.
So I don't want to make him plug his own book. So I'm going to mention Colby's book, which is Google Plus for Photographers, which I recommended as recently as this morning to another photographer who was just trying to figure out how to get from one place to the other. Colby, you know, you've been writing. You've led workshops all over the world. How do you see the education of photographers from your perspective?
Well, for me, I think that, you know, for me personally, I'm a hands-on learner. So, you know, I think it's important, you know, after hearing everyone else speak to say that everyone learns at a different pace. Everyone learns better through different avenues. So some people, I think reading the context of a book helps them maybe grasp the fundamentals of photography. Maybe it's not practical as they're out there in the field and the light's changing, but it helps them grasp, you know, the ideas of ISO and shutter speed and how things kind of correlate together. you know, videos do a great job of kind of the next step. It's more dynamic. It's an engaging. But to me, being out in the field, I think there's nothing really like it. And I certainly may be biased just because I do teach a lot of workshops. And I also happen to learn a lot when I was first starting out doing a handful of workshops. But for me, I think that engaging, sitting there, you're in the moment, the light's changing. For me, I do mostly landscape and nature, as well as humanitarian stuff, although I don't really teach humanitarian photography. And there's something about learning to adjust on the fly and really, you know, dealing with the challenges that I think a lot of introductory photographers don't necessarily realize happens. You know, we don't just go to a scene and know exactly how we're going to do it. It's kind of, at least for me, it's more of an organic approach where I'm kind of constantly checking out the variables of what's going on around me and trying to make the best decision that I can with the limited time that I have available. So,
Trey, from your perspective, you're always about a year ahead of the rest of us. you're the guy who's decided that you're not going to buy any more DSLRs, although we won't get into that because that's gear. What do you see as the biggest change or the changes in how photographers learn what they do?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know if I'm a good person to ask this question because I'm very weird in the way I go about everything. But I, like Matt, I don't read books or even really watch. Actually, I'm different than Matt that I don't watch videos either. I like getting zero input into my brain from other people's teaching styles. The reason is because I feel like I might accidentally start thinking along certain lines that other people are thinking along. Not that the way other people think is wrong or anything. I just like being completely clueless when I go into a situation. And I'm very comfortable with being totally clueless. And I'm also very comfortable with making tons and tons of really weird mistakes. And like, for example, I might see a photo from Derek's story that I think is really, really interesting. And I could probably, you know, just write him an email and ask him how he did it or go watch a video or whatever, but I don't. I like to just really guess and try to figure it out. And along the way, I figure out accidental things. I figure out backwards or sneaky ways to do something, or sometimes a totally new different path. But this is very personal to me, and I know this isn't the way most people learn. And I don't really teach very much at all. I only dedicate a very small, like 10% or less of my year to teaching. But whenever I do figure out something out really cool, I do like to share it on video and in little ebooks and this sort of thing. But oftentimes, and also I feel bad too, because I know people go to these conferences all the time and have a really good time at conferences and learn and workshops and these sorts of things. I've never been to one of these things either. I'm not against them. And this is probably completely irrational. I probably overvalue being outside or whatever, but I feel like I accidentally might start thinking like other people. This is a complex that I'm dealing with. I probably have dumped too much of my own psychological baggage on you in that question. But anyway, that's a little bit of the my bizarre thought process.
Well, I think Trey brings up a good point, which is actually that, you know, along my journey into photography, at the end of the day, I was probably my own best teacher. And that's not a slight to the professionals that I either taught workshops with, videos, or the books that I read. But at the end of the day, it was studying my own mistakes that helped me harness or hone my own vision, that helped me understand my own creative side and helped me learn in real time, you know, what challenges I had, how I was going to overcome them and things like that. So I think that's also, in my personal opinion, a very intricate aspect of photo education these days. I think a lot of people always look to those of us in photo education to solve their problems. And then the reality is we're just, hopefully, again, this is just my personal opinion, we're giving people some sense of knowledge to figure it out on their own, because I think that's the biggest way that people learn is
Can I ask you guys a question? that kind of tails into that, because I always wondered if I was alone with this. Am I the only one that actually likes to go out and shoot alone?
No, no. I absolutely love to do that.
I like a photo walk, but I don't feel like I don't really go on a photo walk to get good photos. I go on a photo walk for the conversational aspect of it. When I want to go out and I actually want to take pictures and I really want to like get better and get great pictures, I really kind of like to be alone. So,
well, that's an interesting.
I hope I'm not alone in that one.
That leads to an interesting question, which is, let's talk a little bit about workshops and photo walks in particular. Mm-hmm. And let's look at the scale of how many people. So, for example, you've got at one end, you've got Matt, who's all by himself, and no one to talk to, but he likes to shoot that way, right? At the other extreme, you've got, you know, Trey Ratcliffe comes to California and leaves a photo walk with 200 people. Which is probably far more of a social experience than a learning experience. Derek, I've attended two of your workshops, which have roughly 8 people. I've also attended workshops that have 20 or 30 people. Colby, I'm not sure how big yours are. So I'd like to sort of go through here and talk about, for you personally, as someone, everybody here or most of the people here are in the role of producing or teaching educational content, but I want you to put your hat on in the role of a learning photographer. And, you know, what works for you? We know that Matt likes to shoot by himself, but Colby, you know, when you do a workshop, how many people are there? And when you've looked at earlier in your career, when you were learning, what did you do? How many people did you study with?
So with my workshops, they vary. Typically, if I'm teaching by myself, it's 6 people. If I have an assistant or another photographer, it's 10, maybe 12 max. I really don't like to go above that. And that's more so my own personal feeling towards being a teacher, being an instructor, and being able to provide enough one-on-one experience for individuals really to get something out of the workshops that I teach. When I was growing into being a photographer and when I was expanding my own education, most of the workshops that I did, which weren't a ton, but certainly was a handful, were kind of more so in the middle, maybe 10 people. I took one that was actually pretty beneficial with National Geographic. It was an adventure sports workshop that had people like Corey Rich and Keith Lazinski, Bob Black, handful of other individuals up in the Grand Tetons. And it was a big classroom, and there was like 30 people, and I got a lot out of it networking-wise. But when it actually came to being out in the field, I constantly found myself kind of gravitating towards areas where everyone else wasn't. So I maybe would take that knowledge and then go apply it in a more intimate setting. And I think, you know, I agree with Matt. You know, I as much as I love teaching, you can be sure that almost after every workshop, I'll stay a couple extra days and just shoot by myself. And maybe that's just cleansing my own sanity. And you know, that's a little hectic running a workshop for anyone that does it out in the field. But I love that intimate aspect of photography in general. And considering I shoot mostly nature landscape, it's the way I typically prefer, you know, being out in the middle of the wild of Patagonia at 3 o'clock in the morning, trying to shoot, you know, moonlit landscapes, and I'm a happy man. So
I should say that, you know, all everybody's here invited because I've learned something from every one of you. And that's how I made this list up. In the case of Derek, as I say, I attended 2 of his workshops. In between those 2 workshops, Derek, I went to one that was produced by one of the national workshop producers. It was in Santa Fe. We had 30 students, 2 instructors, and it was almost a complete waste of time. And I must say that the 2 workshops I did with you were quite the opposite. They were extremely productive. How did you get to the style that you use, and you know, why are you doing it that size as opposed to a larger group or smaller one-on-one tutorials?
Well, and you were my favorite student too, Doug. you know, I think generally speaking, we teach the way that we like to learn. And so I've always liked smaller groups myself. And so I like to teach that way. I learn best in a smaller group where you can really connect with the other people. You know, going back to what Colby and Trey and some of those people were saying earlier, you know, photography is a lot of problem solving. And I think the reason why a lot of shooters like to shoot by themselves is because it's easier to solve problems that way, to figure out, you know, how to get what you want, what's in your mind, and how to get it onto that sensor. And so I think one of the things over the years that I've learned teaching is to allow time for people to problem solve during the workshop. I mean, if you just run them from spot to spot to spot, it doesn't really stick. Whereas if they have assignments and they get to actually work on stuff, and then they have a chance to do some lab work during the workshop, and then they have a chance to exchange ideas with one another, and then go back and do it again and hopefully do it again, then I think, you know, they get to have that process of problem solving, coming to answers, and then it sticks. And then I think it sticks a lot better. And that, you know, that's the way I like to learn. And I think that's what it comes back to. I think a lot of people, what they're going to say on this panel is they're going to say that, you know, they teach a certain way, and chances are they probably, that's the way they absorbed a lot of information too.
Now, Matt, you're, as far as your teaching, you do it in a sort of a very different way. On the one hand, you write a book and you have to finish the book before you get any feedback at all. Mm-hmm. You do these very large presentations with Kelby. You know, there are essentially conferences or
seminars too.
Yeah, seminars, major events with rock bands on stage. I've seen those. You know, what's training like at that scale? Because there are a lot of people who have never gone to a conference or a large group thing like that.
It's definitely different. There's trade-offs to it. You know, if you go to, and the best way I can explain the trade-offs is I've taught with friends of mine, I've taught the 3 and 4 day weekend workshops where you have that small group of 15 people, 20 people, maybe 10 people. And then you've got Photoshop World. So Photoshop World conferences, seminars, they're great places to go and find out a little bit about a whole bunch of things, right? But then when you go on, I'm sure when you go on Colby's workshop, you find out, you go very, very deep into probably not 50 things, but probably you get really, really good at several specific techniques, several specific concepts. And that's what I found in teaching the weekend workshops too, is I get through a lot less material. If it's a small group, it's hands-on, everybody's there following along, I'll probably get through 30% of the material that I would get through if I were standing up in front of 500 people that were just taking notes. Mm-hmm. And so they're very different learning experiences, because at Photoshop World, you'll go to 50 different classes and you'll get an hour kind of bombardment of whatever it happens to be, but you really won't get very deep into it, where I think the smaller things you do.
So Nicole, back in the days before you were the ace extraordinary photographer and you had to learn, what worked for you?
You know, it's really difficult to say, like in a grand scheme of things, like the one thing that worked, because my overall style of, if I have to sit down and I'm forcing myself to learn something, I'm going to use video, especially if it's software. Like I think I learned how to use Adobe Premiere Pro just by watching like 4 hours of a lynda.com thing. But in general photography, I just pick up nuggets of information everywhere and I'm just kind of like a sponge and I absorb them and I don't necessarily know where I got everything from. Like, and I'm going to assume that, okay, I don't have very much formal photography schooling. I don't have a lot of education. I've taken a few classes I learned back in high school, and I'm guessing that probably most, if not all, of the panelists here are in the same boat that I am. We have very little, like, I mean, who here has graduated from a photography school? You know, that's it, you don't find that very often with photographers that are even at the pro level. But a lot of things too, like I can remember having those light bulb moments when I was in high school learning photography, like my first semester of photography ever. I can remember sitting in class and getting aperture and shutter speed and understanding the balance and how they work together. And it was just like the heavens opened up and the angels descended. And I was like, I get it. This is awesome. You know, I want to do this forever. And I have little moments like that. I remember driving on the highway and finally being able to see light, which was, it sounds very silly, but when you before you see light and after you see light, it's like this new world opens up and you're like, oh my God, there's shadow, there's light. I can see where it's coming from. I know what's happening to the face or you know, whatever you're photographing, and you see it everywhere. You don't just see it when you're taking pictures. You see it when you're just walking down the street. And to this day, that's all I see now I see light. I don't see things. I see light. And then, oh, there's a thing. And there's light on it. Look at that. So that's, you know, little bits and pieces. I don't know where I learned it. A lot of it is self-taught. It's not, I wouldn't say self-taught, because I have, you learn from other people. Some things you do, it's discovery and problem solving, like you said, Derek. But I do want to reference a really great article by, it's not a photographer. It's, there's a blog called zenhabits.net. And it's Leo Babauta. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his name, but he writes about learning. He says, what I've learned about learning, and the quote in there is, number one, almost everything I've learned, I didn't learn in school. And number two, almost everything that my students and kids have learned, they learned on their own. And I think that's true for almost anything. If you're passionate about whatever, for all of us here, it's going to be photography or maybe some style of photography or Photoshop or Lightroom. We are going to learn it because we want to, not because someone's forcing it down our throat. So, you know, you pick up those little bits, those nuggets. I could go to 3 full days of Photoshop, a Photoshop conference, go to every single, you know, attend as many classes as I could fit into my schedule. And maybe you come out of there a week later remembering like 2 things. But those 2 things are going to be the biggest things that I wanted to remember. It's not going to be everything. It's going to be those 2 things that I'm like, this is going to help me. This is going to help me. I'm going to remember those forever now. So that's kind of everything I do. Whether it's just shooting with a friend, I've learned so much from just being with other photographers and not even being formally taught, just watching how they work, asking them questions, and maybe, you know, integrating new styles, new things. Like, I've been using a lot of filters. My boyfriend does a lot of long exposure photography. Now I've been starting to get into long exposure photography because I saw him do it and I'm like, that is so cool. So I've been learning that process. Just got a macro lens. What do I do when I get a macro lens? Let me Google how to do focus stacking properly. So now I can learn how to do focus stacking. So that's how I learn. It's just little bits. When I want to learn something, I just kind of force it. You know, I put everything into it.
Well, I think Nicole brings up something interesting and something I hope, either maybe this is a good foray. I didn't know what you had on the docket for the rest of the show, Doug. But I think it's important to talk about individuals knowing why they are signing up for specific pieces of photo education. And you know, for me, I have a registration piece that when someone signs up for my workshops, it's like, hey, you know, what camera do you use? What level are you at? What do you want to work on? You know, why are you taking this workshop? And I think that, you know, people that go to Photoshop World and expect to get really good at 3 things are going to be disappointed. But if they go there with the correct mindset, understanding that they're going to get a lot of information, maybe they're going to learn about, you know, 30, 40 things. They're going to take something and it's going to be the seed that's planted inside their brain. Maybe it's their, you know, inside their passion, where they can then expand upon that education. So, you know, I'd love to get everyone else's take on kind of either what you do with your workshop students or in your avenues of photo education to help educate your clients, your customers, whatever you want to call them, on knowing why they are taking these classes in the first place, because I think that's the biggest key in people being satisfied with the work that we're doing is making sure that individuals are cognizant of the different avenues of photo education and what might be more beneficial to an individual if they have a specific mindset or not.
I think that's great. I think it's a very good point, which is understanding what you expect. And hopefully, in the case of somebody who's offering to sell you a book or a video, you get an idea up front of what that's going to be. Or if you're going to a workshop, hopefully that's made clear by whoever is doing that workshop for you. And let's talk a little bit about something Nicole mentioned, which is the social aspect. I mean, I think Nicole mentioned that she's learned a lot from other photographers. I'm going to put in a plug for something. I'm not sure how many of the rest of you have ever been involved with, but a year and a half ago, I went to Google and I put in Marin Photography Club. I wanted to see if there was a photo club here in the neighborhood. I had no idea. It turns out it's called the Marin Photography Club, of course. And I became a member. And one of the main, they have photo walks, they have special interest groups. But one of the main things about a photography club, at least here in California, is they have formal competitions. And this is something that's suitable for everybody, from a beginner to an expert photographer. They keep you segregated by your skill level. And I'm curious to know if anybody here has ever put any of their work into competition in the past. Anybody? Oh, that's interesting. See, nobody's done that.
Well, I when I was a kid, I entered stuff at the state fair, but that was so long ago. And
did you win, Nicole?
I think I got a People's Choice Award.
That's awesome.
On one of them.
Is this for your art, or is this like a pig that you put in?
No, it was a photo.
Well, I think it's something that people should consider, because it's, you know, compared to going to conferences or taking an expensive workshop, the photo club's essentially free. You know, you have some local dues, but not only will you interact with other photographers face to face, but in our case, we have a different judge that comes in from the outside every month. They look at both. There's a digital competition, a projected, I should say. There's a print competition every month. And not only do I learn so much from what these judges say about my images, but I learn at least as much from what they say about everybody else's images. Well, I also learn about which judges I think are ridiculous and which ones are not.
Doug, I actually have a quick question about that. So, you know, looking at how the industry has changed over the last 10 years, let alone last 15 or 20, and obviously how things are going with social networks. Obviously, Google Plus is big with photographers. That's what we're here on. Facebook is stepping it up. What's with that? Photography in general. We have 500 pics. We have Flickr. We have all these aspects of sharing images.
No, I think I'm okay. I don't even know where I put my cup.
When we start looking at individuals really, you know, taking an art form and really kind of going into a competition with it, you know, I think it also has some sort of negative connotations as well, in the sense of, you know, for me personally, my photography is very personal. You know, every piece that I put, every piece that I take, a piece of myself is in it, so to speak. I'm not necessarily shooting for other people. And when I thought about entering contests when I was first starting out, I was always, it swayed me from entering, is because I felt that it wasn't good for me personally to try to compare or be competitive necessarily. Maybe comparing is okay, but being competitive
I think the local photo club, Colby, is really different from the state fair. The state fair, you enter an image and you either get the blue ribbon or you don't.
Right.
In the case of the local photo club, it's all about getting the feedback. It's right. About looking at each other's images. So although it is formally a competition, I would say that's not the main reason people do it. It's because you sit there for a couple of hours in the evening, and a judge goes through as many as 120 photographs in a night and comments on them and says why he likes things and how each image could be made better. Right. And again, you're getting that feedback on yours as well as everyone else's. I mean, you know, if there are, you know, 100 images and maybe there are a total of 15 categories, there aren't going to be that many people who are winning awards,
right.
But you're going to get a lot of feedback. So I think there's a difference between the state fair type of competition or entering some magazine's contest versus that. Now, Derek, you're about to do something, and you do something with your students. Tell us about that.
Well, I just wanted to tell you about the photo club thing for a second. You brought it up. I had one of my biggest aha moments at a photo club meeting, and it was sort of like what Nicole's talking about. And it was Galen Rohl was speaking up here in the North Bay, and he said, you know, one of the biggest tricks to photography, of course, we were all shooting film then, so one of the biggest tricks to photography is just learning how the camera sees the world also. So that, because, you know, a lot of photographers early in their career have a hard time of getting what's in their head, you know, to come out of the camera. And he says, you have to learn how to see the world the way Kodachrome looks at the world and the way Velvia looks at the world. And that changed my photography. Suddenly, you know, I went from struggling with exposure and things like that to learning how the different films worked. And then suddenly I could translate, you know, what was in my head to coming out of the camera. That came out of the camera club. And, you know, that, you know, I'll always remember that.
You know, I have a comment on...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, you can go. I spoke for like 20 minutes on my last little piece. You can go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead.
You sure?
Okay. Hey, I'll go after.
Okay, this will be quick. So one thing with photo competitions, like what you were saying, Doug, with like maybe the smaller ones where you're going to get feedback, or if you know it's going to happen ahead of time, like I was just at a photo walk here in Seattle, and ahead of time, Jacob Lucas was the leader, and he was like, okay, there's going to be a photo contest afterwards, you know, so everyone has a little bit of motivation, a little bit of incentive, and they want to get a good photo. I know I started back into photography and kind of got to where I am today because I found iStock Photo because I was looking for a way to focus my photography energy on something and create photos. So it's not just about getting feedback and winning something, but it's about kind of putting your focus on something and really putting effort into it. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have self-drive to do it. It's just if you have that little boost, you know, that little bit can help.
Go ahead, Matt.
And I was going to, one of the things that you talked about, Doug, it was very different from any photo club that I'd ever experienced, which is probably why I never really did any photo competitions, was there was no feedback aspect to it. And I think that's kind of like the tipping factor of the whole thing is the feedback. That's where you really do learn. See, anyone that I had ever experienced was you put your photos in and you go to the meeting and you find out if you won or not. And that's it. You never heard a word about it. You never heard why the winners won and why the people that didn't win, what was wrong or what could be better. So that feedback aspect of it, that alone to me would be worth submitting your photos into it. Even if you knew it wasn't going to be the best, I'd love the feedback from it.
Well, yeah, that's an educational process at that point. It's not a competition. I guess that's kind of what I was going at is that, you know, I see a lot of these competitions. You see outdoor photography, you see all these things, but it seems that a lot of people are entering in the sense to win and beat everyone else and have the best photograph rather than kind of, and to me that kind of takes away a little bit of the personal nature of it. And I think that if it becomes an educational process, if it becomes, you know, something a little bit more intimate, a little bit more social, then I think it certainly has a ton of validity. But I just worry seeing all these competitions and seeing, you know, people jump on Facebook and, you know, vote for my photo and all these things. And it just, you know, we start comparing swords and all of a sudden someone's eventually going to be a loser. And this is an
art form at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. It's all subjective. And so, I don't know. When you don't give any of the details of why someone won and why someone lost, then it just becomes, you know, it's like you watched a movie and the ending was horrible, but you don't know why it happened and no one's explaining it to you. And you're just kind of left the movie theater feeling a little bit disheveled. And why did I spend $15 on this? And
I would suggest people stay away from these, you know, these competitions where you send an image in and you pay a fee to join a competition. There's not much point in that. But I think, Colby's, you've made me realize that there are photo clubs and there are photo clubs. And that I've been very lucky to have a good local one. And anybody who's interested should certainly check out one, find out whether it's just going to be a competition or whether it's a real feedback process. Derek, I think you were going to say something.
I did. You know, I mean, that's my favorite part of the workshop. And I think you've experienced it where you work the whole weekend on learning stuff and practicing it. And then at the end of it, you put six images up on the screen and you talk about it. And then you see what six images from the guy next to you and six images from the woman down, you know, two seats down. And I love that process. I mean, that is, to me, the highlight of the whole thing where people talk about what they're trying to do. And you were standing right there often when they took that shot and you go, wow, I didn't see that. I did not realize that shot was there. And yet that person's putting it up on the screen right there. I think that's thrilling.
It is. You know, I want to drag in for a second, Nicole, come back. But I want to drag in our two producers here because, you know, I'm not a professional photographer. My experience level is, you know, like Tony's and Dave's here. I'm still in the very early learning stages. And I'm curious, Tony, let's put you on the spot. When it comes to the social aspect, you know, the photo walks and things like that, how have they helped you? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, how important have they been in your process of learning photography?
I meet them and then they end up circling me on Google Plus or following me on Flickr, and so it's a nice way for me to meet people who I sort of would take criticism and critiques from because I know them and they're not just, because I thought about entering a photo contest last month and I was filling out the form. I had like three pictures picked out and my credit card out and it was like $50 and I was like, why am I doing this? I know this is a good picture. I mean, I don't need them to, you know, validate that. So, I've been getting a lot out of Google Plus just because the photographers that I follow, they're very active on there, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback. Well,
good. How about you, Dave?
You get,
Nicole, go ahead.
I just had a quick question. Are you asking for feedback, or are you just posting a photo and then you're just seeing how people respond?
Yeah, I'm just posting photos, and you know, because they just met me, so they will actually go check out my pictures, and I get feedback from them that way. So.
Okay. I'm always curious what it would be like if we just were to start, like if I were to post a photo, maybe it's one that I think is a really good photo of mine, and just say honest feedback, you know, and I want people to tell me, because most of the time you only get people saying the good things, and that's not to say anything bad about anyone's photos. It's just, you know, people are more likely to say something good, and if they see something they don't like, they're just going to like pass over it.
Well, I'm going to come back to that one, because Colby had some very specific things that he did early on in the days of Google Plus. But before I do that, I just want to check with Dave about your experiences learning from social media and has it, you know, advanced your photography at all?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest challenge with photography is just getting out there and shooting. And with Google Plus and photo walks or making new friends that are interested in the subject that I'm interested in, now I have people to share it with, so it makes me want to go out there and shoot and better myself. Before, I was just kind of only doing it for myself, which is just fine, but I didn't really have anybody I could share that experience with, and now I do, and it's really cool.
So in the days when Google Plus first got started, which we think is coming up, I think June 30th is some anniversary of that or whatever, right when I got involved with Google Plus was the same time where my photography really ramped up to a serious level. And I remember, Nicole, you and I tried to figure out when exactly we met. It was in those first weeks of Google Plus, in a hangout, in fact. Mm-hmm. And then Colby, you were somebody who I became familiar with also early on, and you started a project, I believe, trying to get photographers to critique one another's work online. Tell us what did you learn from doing that?
Yeah, so, you know, in the early days of Google Plus, and honestly, to this day on any social network, typically you have, you know, an individual post a photo and, you know, maybe they ask for feedback, maybe they don't, but they typically get just a small amount of response. And so when they're asking you for feedback, and they don't get any response, it's kind of disheartening. And to be honest, I saw a photo that I thought was pretty compelling. I certainly noticed there were some, what I would consider mistakes, things that I would have changed. And the guy had asked for feedback and didn't get anything. So at that point, I built up a decent following. I was one of the more followed photographers at the time. And I simply reshared it, asking for, hey, can you give this guy some feedback? And the response was astronomical. Just a ton of people chimed in. The guy ended up getting a ton of information, some of it he had to disseminate himself. But it really kind of, a light clicked in my head. And I was like, okay, we need to figure out a way to utilize Google Plus, because all these photographers were jumping on the network, in order to give people feedback that wanted it. And I think that's also a key thing. I think that if, you know, any of us post a photo out there and we're not necessarily wanting feedback, or a beginner photographer that is just starting to build their confidence and they post a photo out there and they don't want feedback, they're just trying to share their passion, and someone tears it apart and it kind of really, you know, cuts into that passion that they have and that drive. That's kind of an issue. So what I did is I actually created a group on Google Plus. In the beginning days, it was very rudimentary. Now there's a page, and I have moderators running it for me. But basically, the whole idea was that you put a simple tag on your image, a hashtag that says BTL. It's behind the lens. It's actually what I typically use for a lot of my online workshops and things like that. It's called BTL photo critique. So if someone has that tag on it, then anyone that's within this group basically can chime in and give their feedback. And for me, that was very important, because it kind of plays along with the sense of being your own, you know, photo instructor, you know, kind of learning on your own, but also from other individuals, as Nicole said. And so what I found is that people learned a lot about objectively looking at their own work by starting to critique others. And the point wasn't necessarily for the original artist that shared the work to, you know, really take maybe the 50 responses that they got and really take every single one of those to heart. But just like you're going to, you know, Photoshop world and you're getting a ton of information, maybe they found a few points that they would have changed. Maybe, you know, half the stuff that people chimed in was irrelevant and they weren't going to listen to it. And they really liked that tree there, no matter how many people said that they should take it out. But there was a handful of different pieces that people got out of it. And it's been quite successful. So today, to this day, we have like 6,000, maybe 7,000 photographers that are fairly active in participating. I have 15 moderators that basically run the group, which is good because I don't have any time to do it myself anymore. But it's been a really good photo education tool on both respects for those giving and receiving in order to help individuals both build confidence and get some creative feedback on their images.
Colby, tell us how to find that. For people who want to find that on Google Plus.
Yeah, if you're on Google Plus, just do a simple Google Plus search for Behind the Lens Photo Critique. There's also links on my own personal profile that can get you there. And it's pretty straightforward. All you got to do to participate really is just add a hashtag with BTL and then BTL critique, and you'll start getting some feedback. Like I said, my moderators basically help when your post slips through the feed of everyone else's to kind of reshare it with people in our group so that we constantly are trying to get everyone to have feedback. So
I think those of us who have spent any time on Flickr in particular, and it's true on Google Plus too, know that it's pretty easy to put up images and have people say, oh, I love it. And, you know, you sort of get tired. I mean, it's very nice to have people love your work, but, you know, you really would like to learn what makes an image good for people and what might not. And I think those BTL groups are really helpful.
Doug, you've heard, yeah, have you ahead. Ever heard where it's the saying, you know, Flickr's where you go when you need a hug?
Digital hugs.
I haven't, but I have experienced that, so I can understand. Matt, now, Kelby has jumped, you know, feet first into the whole Google Plus thing. They've got a conference coming up later this month. You're going to be there, I assume. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, from it's funny. I think of you guys as, you know, the big media company in photography between Kelby Training and NAPP. Mm-hmm. What you know, what's your perspective on how, or, you know, the importance of social media to what you guys are doing from your business perspective, but then from you personally, what you think it's going to mean?
I think, you know, one of the big things I think for social media and when it comes to photographers, and I can look back at my own career to kind of parallel this to, is that, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you could rely on people to do marketing for you. Okay. So, you know, and over at Kelby Media Group, we could rely on our marketing team to do the marketing for us. And I think it's changed drastically. I don't think you can do that anymore. And that's where I think social media becomes more important, is because you can't rely on anybody. Now you have to do the marketing yourself, whether you like it or not. You know, you can sit there and you can fight it and you can say, well, you know, people shouldn't care whether I have a Twitter account, and people shouldn't care whether I have a Facebook or a Google Plus account. But the fact is that they do. And that's where they're going to get information. And that's where I think social media becomes really important to us, whether we're an educator or photographer, whatever it happens to be, is that you've got to kind of be in those places if you're going to garner that audience that's already there.
Yeah. And I got to say, when that conference was first announced and I looked at the program, I said, there's no way I'm going to spend that money to go to the conference. I mean, you know, I'm already on Google Plus. I live my life on there. Why should I bother? And over time, I gave in. I yielded and I bought my ticket. I'm going to be there. But I've got to tell you, the main reason...
Hey, we got to go shooting when we're there too.
We got to do it. But just the two of us. Oh, sorry. So you like to do that by yourself. I forgot.
No, Colby can come too.
Oh, okay. Sweet. The main reason that drew me there actually was the social aspect. It was the opportunity to see in the flesh a lot of the people that I know from Google Plus, and then I'll have a chance to see up close. Hey, I want to see one other thing that's really important. I want to point out that of all of us, you know who the pro is, because Matt, you're the one who's the best about looking straight into the camera. So you're the one who's done this the most, I can tell.
So you touched on, I think, one of the reasons why people even go to conferences, and it's the social aspect. You can find the training online, right? I mean, I don't know about any of you guys. When, you know, we all go speak at conferences and trade shows at some point. When you go there, Are you giving the secret little tips that you never, ever give anywhere else?
Exclusive.
You're not. I mean, like, you know, I can only teach Lightroom so many ways. There's no other way to teach a collection in Lightroom. So when I teach it at a conference, it's the same way I teach it online. But people go to conferences for very, very different reasons. It's not just the learning. It is a social. It is a network.
Well, and Matt, after your sessions, how long is the line of people wanting to ask you questions individually? You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's sometimes it takes 30 minutes just to get through the line of questions after. So, and I think they save those questions up, even though they know they can ask them online. Sometimes they just kind of save them up so that they can come and actually just get that personal interaction with people.
Yeah, I want to say one thing that's interesting is that although I am going to the conference and I really am looking forward to it and I don't mind having spent the money, that for that same amount of money or less, actually, I could sign up for an entire year of Kelby training online, which is, you know, and you mentioned something early on. This is just a little thing, but one of the questions is, like, if you look at Lightroom training or Photoshop training, look at Photoshop in particular, it's such a complex product that, you know, I might learn something about layer masks or clipping masks or something like this. And if I don't use it, I'm going to forget it. And one of the things that's happened with online video from Kelby, from lynda.com, even the free stuff that's available on YouTube, and there's a lot, is it's become a good reference material. It used to be that something like video was organized in tutorial fashion only. If you wanted to look up how to do something, it wasn't a good way to do it. But because people are putting up shorter pieces, I find if I want to find out how to do something in Photoshop, how to do something in Lightroom, that actually going to my video resources is probably my preferred way now.
Yeah. Because I talked a lot before, but I like to throw this at anybody because I think, Derek, you've done the weekend long workshops. Colby, you do them, and I'm not sure if Nicole, if you do them, but one of the things that I don't think will ever go away about these 3 and 4 day workshops, and the reason why I think we probably all agree that all of these learning resources are part of the whole system, you have to do them all, is that when you go to that weekend workshop, you have to put those things into practice, you know, and you guys will probably attest to this because I've taught them as well, is you get these people that come to these workshops, they know everything about the camera, they know everything about Photoshop and everything about Lightroom, and when you put their tripod down and you say, take a nice picture, they're paralyzed. Right. And they'll sit there if it's sunrise at Mesa Arch in Moab, and they'll sit there and they'll put their tripod down and they won't move for an hour and a half because they're paralyzed about it. But you know, I'm sure Cole, I'm sure you guys get them out of that. And that to me is one of the best parts about doing that. And what you just said, Doug, is we learn all these different things. It's putting them into practice. And that's why I think when you get into some of those smaller groups and those smaller workshops, just to tie this back in to the topic, is that you have to put it into practice. You can't just read it. You can't just watch it on a video and say, oh, cool, I'll try to remember that. You got to actually do it.
Well, yeah, because on my weekend workshops, you got 6 images you got to put up on the board. Yeah. So you have to shoot the shots. You can't.
You don't let them put up only 4.
No, they got to come up with 6.
Nice. You know, and something also about actually teaching, or I do help desk work with NAPP, and I don't know every single thing about Photoshop, but I know how to find the answer if I don't know the answer. And when I've learned a lot about Photoshop in the almost 2 years, year and a half, 2 years that I've been doing this, because I get questions that I'm on parts of Photoshop that I've never used before, you know, or that I don't necessarily use it as a designer. So I have to kind of go outside of my comfort zone, and I've really increased my knowledge of Photoshop just because I've been teaching it, or I guess it's kind of teaching. It's answering questions, which is similar. So,
it's teaching. It's
yeah.
Teaching. You know, I've done, as I mentioned, I did 2 workshops with Derek, and I had the same experience both times. Derek warned us that we'd be pretty tired after 2.5 days, and I was. And in particular, though, I'm strong technically. My challenges are on the creative side, and I know that after 2.5 days, I was, in both cases, pretty disappointed with the images that I took home with me. And it wasn't until a week later or longer that I realized how much I'd actually learned, because I was actually seeing things differently. That was the main thing for me. As Derek said, it's seeing how other people see things. It's experiencing it for yourself. I don't know if anybody else, of course, we have people who are better photographers than I, but if anybody else has experienced that, where you actually don't understand how much you've absorbed or learned or improved as a photographer until sometime later.
Well, I think you get that photo high, I think, off of a trip, and that can go both positive and negative. And for me personally, there's a lot of times that I'm shooting for myself or for contract work or licensing stuff. And I'll come away from a trip and I'll walk away from it. And on the plane ride home, I'll be like, oh, I didn't get anything I really wanted. And in reality, for me, it's much more until I actually go back and find the time to process the images that I do have, that things come into fruition. I realize what I was able to get and what I was able to shoot. And for me, that's unfortunate these days. I'm actually packed up about 14 months for my editing. So it's typically way, way far behind. But I think it does happen. And I think that people... I think it's hard when you come off of those highs and to really find, until you get that balance again, you're typically in one direction or another.
Yeah. Yeah. I think personality has so much to do with it. I tell this story, the difference between me and a friend of mine, Ben Long. And when I do a shoot, right after the shoot, I look at the images and I just love the shoot. I just love the images. And then over a period of time, I grow to hate most of them. And and then my friend Ben is just the opposite. When he first looks at his images after a shoot, he just hates everything. He says, why am I a photographer? Why do I even mess around with this? You know, I'm terrible. And then 2-3 weeks later, he'll find 2 or 3 that he really loves and works. And next thing I know, they're a big image, you know, that he prints out and they're hanging on the wall. And so I think, you know, each of us has our own personality and how we view our work. And I think we just have to get in touch with that and then, you know, let it run its course so that we do end up with, you know, good shots. And the other thing is, we got to get other people's feedback a little bit too. You know, I think along the way is helpful.
I think that's the sharing element. I think that people really love the sharing. I mean, that's why, to me personally, that's why I think social networks have been so popular for photographers in general, is just that sharing. Is just the, either feedback or even if you just want digital hugs, whatever it is. I think that's an important aspect of art. You know, at the end of the day, yes, we do make a living as photographers in this group, but individuals that are just starting out or other professionals, I still think sharing is such a huge part of the passion, is a huge part of being able to share our experiences and all these things. And whether we're learning from it or not, I think it's, to me, that's one of the most exciting things about the digital evolution of photography.
Yeah, get those images off your hard drive.
Exactly. Put them out there.
Yeah. Put them out there.
Nicole, you wanted to jump in there?
I just kind of wanted to bounce off of what you were saying about seeing. And I think, you know, of course, as a photographer, it's very important. I believe I'm a geek at heart and I love the technical side of photography, but I also am much a geeky creative person. And as a photographer, we have to learn how to see things, not just how to make our camera have the setting set properly, so the exposure is right or the depth of field is what we want it to be. It's about seeing. It's about learning your camera, learning your lenses. And like, I can look at a scene and go, okay, I know pretty much what that would look like if I photographed that with my 70 to 200 at 200 millimeter, or maybe I'll throw my 24 tilt on and shift it down a little bit, you know, because I use certain lenses all the time. So I know them, like they're like my second set of eyes basically. And I think that's really important for people to really just know their gear. You know, I don't want to get into a gear talk, but it's just knowing how to see and being able to look at a scene and go, oh my God, I want to photograph that, because I can see my photo in my brain right now and know exactly what I would do. So, you know, it's that seeing part and just walking around. I went on like my own little photo walk. It was so gorgeous in Seattle, which doesn't happen very often. And I was walking around the Seattle Center. I took my X100 and I didn't really get anything until like the last few minutes on my walk, and I just saw something, and I was like, I kind of worked it for maybe like 5 minutes, and I posted it on my profile today, and it was just a very simple photo, but it's, you know, I saw it, and it was another one of those kind of what you're saying, Matt, about photo walking by yourself or doing your own stuff, you know, because you kind of get in your own zone. But you know, it's just learning how to see things differently as a photographer. That's, I think, very important.
So, Nicole, here's something about seeing. I'm always afraid to interrupt that. I'm afraid my bandwidth is so bad, I'll just stop down this most excellent conversation. But I'll try here because you said something. I want to play off.
It's good.
You're good.
Okay, good. Well, so there is this magical moment, and I think this is one thing that photo walks really help people, because a lot of people that come out for photo walks, you know, they really don't understand their camera. They're not totally comfortable with it yet. They feel like it's something, you know, it's like, okay, this year I'm going to learn how to use my camera. This spring, that's my goal. And sometimes you see something magical happen, and we've all been through this, and we really take this for granted. I'm sure we take this for granted. In fact, whenever I see this one thing happen, and you guys will all know what I'm talking about, but like, let's say that we're just a normal person, right, not a photographer. And we're sitting there at a table, and we see a coffee cup, right? Go, oh, you know, there's a coffee cup on the table. It looks nice. You know, it's sort of, it's nicely composed there against a candle or whatever. It looks nice. And then when you start taking photos, you go, okay, well, I'm going to start moving around this coffee cup and take photos of it at different angles and orient it with a nice salt and pepper shaker or whatever. You know, you're just moving your body around the table taking photos, okay? But then at some point, you no longer need to walk around the table to know what that looks like from every angle, because something magical happens and you can extend your consciousness out around the whole table. In fact, that doesn't just happen with a coffee table or with a coffee cup. It happens everywhere. As you're walking down the street, your consciousness is suddenly able to encompass, you know, like a 50-foot radius around your body, and you see everything from multiple perspectives, and it's really awesome. So that you know what something's going to look like before you actually have to physically take your body over there to take a photo.
I think it's a very nice moment. Trey, that's an out-of-body experience, except the body is a 5D Mark II. I'm sorry.
That was good. In a geeky way, I guess.
I deserve all the bad.
You know, with that kind of to go off of that is, if you're ever photographing people, because when I work with models, I always try and show them what I'm, you know, I get a few good, when I get like one good one right off, you know, like maybe the first couple minutes, I always try and show them what I'm getting. And oftentimes they're like, oh, wow, because they can't really see what I'm seeing, but they also don't see as a photographer, right? Unless they're a photographer, but for the most part, they don't see the way I do, even when I'm not looking through my camera. So they might be like, where the heck am I? You know, I remember Zach Arias gave a talk once, and he's always talking about taking models into alleyways and stuff and filled with junk and smelling like gross stuff, and how he took this picture and he finally showed it to the model. And she was like, you know, just like speechless, because she had no idea that he could create such a beautiful image from such a disgusting place. So it's important, you know, that's kind of a testimony to what we, you know, as photographers, what the difference is. Mm-hmm. We're not normal. We see things very differently.
So I want to jump in here because we're running out of time soon. But one of the things I asked some of the panelists to do was to bring in some homework. I made it hard for them, and a couple of them went with me. I want to look at some of the images that people help them show us something they've learned from photography or something that somehow relates to their training. I'll start it off here just with a couple of quick ones if I can figure out where to share. I know it's somewhere. Screen share. There it is. And that one. Okay. Selected window. So can you guys see that image? Does that show up for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
I know that image.
You know that image.
make your screen a little bit wider.
Make my screen wider.
Your,
okay, that's just
your browser wider.
My browser wider. Okay, hang on a second. I'll do that. What happens if I go that way? What does that do? Is that better?
Now it fills the frame a little bit better.
Now it's full screen on my 27-inch monitor. Okay. So this is an image that I took at a workshop. It was in Santa Fe. Dave Black was the instructor. And Dave is really good with light painting. And this is one that he actually helped me with, just holding a flashlight. The fill light is from the Dawn light, and the key light is actually from a handheld flashlight. And it got me started on a whole new way of seeing things and lighting using flashlights, which I had never even considered before. So that was sort of fun. Here's one that another workshop I took. This was a marvelous. This was Joe McNally had a group of about 40 photographers who got into Alcatraz last year after dark. We had the whole island to ourselves, just 40 people. And I just had to show that off because I wanted to be able to say that I shot with Joe McNally. That's all. But we had a lot of fun there. And finally, this is one that I enjoy myself. But this was just me and my photo buddy, Scott Loftusness. We go out shooting and going out with him on Friday. We try and shoot together every other week or so. And for me, that's one of the best ways of shooting is just going out with one other photographer. I can't do it with my wife because, as we all know, my wife is a non-photographer. And she'll say, oh, wow, look at that scene. And I'll say, nah, there's not a good shot there. And then I'll see a rock or some rusty thing, and I'll want to spend 30 minutes with it. We all know what that's like. So, Matt, I know you brought something to share. What have you got for us?
All right. So can I do two?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I just got to figure out how to get back to my other browser window. Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
All right. So here should be, we got one up.
Yeah,
anything?
Yeah, we see it.
Yeah, we're good.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. You can see it. It looks all good.
Right. So, and the way I read your question, Doug, was a photo that, you know, it's somehow somewhere that, you know, a lesson that somebody taught you. And I think, you know, way back when I first started shooting, you'd always hear the magic hour, you know, you want to shoot at sunrise and sunset. And I always enjoy family portraiture. So over the years I've built up, I don't advertise, but I've just built up a small list of clients that I have that come to me to shoot their family portraits. And when I first started, I struggled with this whole, like, you know, I take people out near sunset and I'd struggle with it because they'd be facing the sun and they'd be squinting. And you know, I remember thinking to myself, like, why am I shooting at sunset? You know, they can't see the light's still contrasty if they're looking at it, you know? And I read somewhere, or no, I shouldn't say read. I had seen a video from somebody and the thing that he said, and it was such a simple concept. He said, when you're out shooting like that and you're at sunrise, sunset, and you're shooting people, he said, put the people between you and the sun. So the sun is generally behind them. And as soon as I started doing that, I started realizing, like, oh, crap, this is why I'm going out at this. Because you really can't do it at high noon. You know, high noon, everything's shadowy and contrasty. But, you know, when you get around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and you put the sun behind somebody, it totally changes the photo. And it's almost like, you know, it's backlit. It's almost like you're in a studio and using a flash to light their hair. So that to me was a dramatic changing point in my photography career when I figured out how to do that.
You actually did a good job on the homework assignment, Matt. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And then another one was this one. This was in Dead Horse Point in Arches, Canyonlands, that whole area. And again, early on, one of the things that somebody taught me was that when you're out shooting, and especially I also love to shoot landscapes and nature. And so what would happen to me when I would shoot landscapes is I'd get caught in one place. I'd get stuck on my tripod. And I was that guy at Mesa Arch for an hour and a half with basically walking away with one photo because I never ever moved. So I you know, years ago I was at Dead Horse Point and I made it this mission. I knew where the sun was coming up and I set myself there and I sat there and I shot for about, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes while the sun was coming up. And as soon as I felt I got the shot, I grabbed my tripod and I started walking around and I'm walking down this path and I kind of just stopped and I was like, that's a cool looking tree. And the sky behind it and just the, you know, the lighting, you can see where the sun's coming up on the right hand side. So this is, I guess, you know, another one. And over the years, I've made a point to do that. Whenever I'm out shooting, whatever it is, you know, if it's landscape nature, I just make sure that I don't shoot whatever it is to death. You know, shoot whatever you want 5 or 10 minutes and get on there and move on to something else. That way, when you walk away from your shoot, you have maybe 5, 10, 15 different shots rather than just one because you stayed there an hour and a half.
Well, yeah, and there's nothing like having 400 5D Mark two frames of the same shot, you know, in RAW.
Yeah.
And you're it's great advice.
You walk away disappointed almost because you're like,
yeah,
I was in this beautiful place with all these cool things. And like you, Derek, and I'm sure Colby's seen it too. You go back into the classroom and that person who did sit there for an hour and a half sees all these people with all these great photos. And they're like, where'd you get that? Like, oh, it was right. Yeah. It was 10 steps from where you were standing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great point.
Okay. Is that it, Matt? You got more?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Nicole, what have you got for us?
Yeah. Let me get sharing here real quickly. Okay. So you guys see that all right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. So that little story I was talking about doing my own little photo walk, this is actually the photo that I took from it. And yeah, you know, I live in Seattle. There's the Space Needle just right over here, but there was like no clouds in the sky, which is very unusual. Usually it's just overcast like crazy. But you know, I got a nice reflection probably because of where the light was and some nice light on the Space Needle. So I went back to process this. I guess this is more of a Photoshop thing, an editing thing. And I realized I'm going to add clouds to this. And it seems silly because it's such a basic photography or Photoshop editing thing, but I never do it because I never think to do it. And I've been really involved with Onwin software lately, and they have a perfect masking or perfect mask, which is really simple to just like knock out a background. So I use that, and I use those clouds that I was just showing to add some nice clouds and textures in the sky. And it worked with this photo because I was worried that if I had some dramatic clouds that it wouldn't work with the reflection, but I think it hides it nicely with the weirdness in the building. So, and then I just, you know, push it to black and white. So that's that final image, but just sky replacement, you know, it's such a simple concept and I know how to do it. It's one of those things where it never clicked in my brain to really ever use that. And so I've been shooting a lot more clouds. Actually, these clouds for this were shot the night of the supermoon. So I was out waiting for sunset and I was going to photograph the supermoon. And I was like, oh, it's pretty clouds in the sky. So I'm kind of trying to just train myself to see these things ahead of time and try and get these stock images of clouds and whatnot, you know, to throw into my images. So there's my little...
Excellent. I have to tell you, Nicole, by the way, I like the black and white version, but I have to tell you, I used to have this T-shirt that said Seattle Summer, July 17th, and that was it. And it had like a big fish sitting under an umbrella on the beach, and that was it.
All right, so Colby, what did you bring for us?
Let's see if I can share this here. There we go. All right. Everyone see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. So my what I learned is actually twofold. So one of them is that over the last 8 years, I've learned that being a photographer in most genres of photography, we're kind of a dime a dozen. And I don't mean that in a negative context towards any of the professionals, those of us that make a living doing this. But the reality is there's more people today with digital cameras than ever before in the history of mankind, whether it's a cell phone, whether it's a point and shoot, whether it's more affordable digital SLRs. So one of the biggest things I learned, which was just from studying everyone else's work when I was first getting into photography, was the reality that you have to do something different. So it doesn't always have to be location-based, but if you go to a location in a location like Yosemite, like this picture is actually of Cerro Torre, which is in southern Patagonia, that's been shot millions of times. In order to get something unique, you kind of have to go the extra mile, so to speak. No pun intended.
Literally.
So for this, it's like a 10-kilometer hike in from El Chalten, which is the little village there in Argentina. And this was actually taken about 3:45 in the morning. And, you know, I was the only person out there at this time. And not only was I out here at the off time of year, I wasn't there during the high season when typically everyone goes to this area of Patagonia. It was kind of on the fringe. But being out there in the middle of the night and just having that intimate experience was both exhilarating as an artist and also allowed me to get something that's much more unique than a lot of people have been able to get, or at least work that I've seen out there. The second piece that I like to tie into this, and I've all three of these images are similar in the sense that they're night shots that are lit by the moon, and that's doing your research. I think that, you know, for me, when I first got into nature and landscape photography, I was just taking pictures of everything that I saw beautiful. And then when I started to think about expanding that and be like, hey, maybe I want to get into night photography, and you have all these pictures of beautiful Milky Way shots and all this stuff, I wanted to, again, do something unique. And so I started timing a lot of my trips by the lunar calendar. So when I'm in a location like Patagonia, I don't want to be there when there's no moon. I also don't want to be there when there's a full moon, because that's going to blow out the rest of the sky. I want to be there when it's kind of at one of the quarters, either at the beginning or the tail end, because it provides a really nice, soft, gentle light. Two other images I have here that go along for both of those accounts. Another one is from Fitzroy. And I don't know if these are turning out fuzzy on everyone else's screen. They're actually sharp. But this is Mount Fitzroy, and so there's this beautiful pond. And again, I was out about 3 o'clock in the morning. It was a clear sky, which is pretty rare in Patagonia for anyone that's actually been down to that region. And again, both understanding and researching when you're going to locations, the different variables that you can get, as well as just kind of going the extra mile. And the last one is a black and white picture that I turned, which is Mount Pumare. So this is actually just behind Everest Base Camp. I love the Himalayas. I've been out there about 4 times. And it's a beautiful mountain. And I was out there with just a bunch of annoying yaks that were making a lot of noise, and set up my camera and had fun for about an hour. And this is one of my favorite images. And it's just a nice, soft, moonlit mountain, and then fading into the overcast sky that was kind of invading the clear night sky that at least was there when I originally started.
So, the Big Dipper looks terrific there.
Yeah, no, it was it was cold, but it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was about -10, but
Those are terrific, terrific. Anybody else have anything we want to share? We're going to go to, I'll let Trey introduce if he wants our Google Plus discoveries. But anybody else?
I could try one here just real quick. I haven't done screen share, so here we go, kids.
Okay, we're holding our breath.
What do I do? Do
hit the screen share button and then select a window?
And then select a window.
Yeah.
Did it work?
No, we're still seeing you instead.
Oh my gosh, that's not what we want. All right,
like y'all there.
Yeah. No, we don't want me.
Why don't you work on that, Derek?
Obviously, I'm a better teacher than student. Doug.
We'll work on that. Hey, Trey, how about you? I'll bet you've got one. I know that because it says so in the chat.
Yeah. So I'll show one that I took this morning. Let me screen share. This may take a long time to load.
Yeah, really. Oh, no, it came up pretty well.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Oh, good. So I went over to this abandoned copper mine early this morning. I woke up about 5 a.m., and I went over there with a guy from my team, Curtis Simmons. We have a bunch of people down here from Stuck in Customs. And we did some behind-the-scenes footage of me taking this photo, and I kind of talked through it. And I used a lot of different things to get this photo, and sort of, you know, I think what happens over time is you start learning all these different bits and tricks, and then kind of jamming them all together in unexpected ways makes for some nice photos. So this is just sort of two things that went into this photo. One is a really wide-angle lens. You know, if you use a really wide-angle lens, it warps everything, but I like using it on rocks because a warped rock looks just like a rock. You can't tell the difference. So I like getting down really low. The surf really wasn't quite that high. But, you know, if you're down low, you can always make the surf look a little bit more extreme. And then I like to do 5 exposures from -2 to +2. But what I would do is I would just take the -2 immediately, and I would save the -1, 0, and +1 for a big wave, and then I would fire very quickly when those would come along, because I knew I could get those nice and clean and quick. So sort of a combination of a wide angle plus auto bracketing helped me to catch the wave nice and clean.
And is this a composite of those multiple exposures for different parts of the photo?
Yeah, it's not totally, it's partially composite. It's a combination of a composite in it and an HDR photo with a little bit of cross processing. Gotcha. And I kind of futz around with them. You know, it's funny. Now let me unscreen share. And this is obviously, I'm the kind of guy that loves post-processing. But I find more and more now that when I go out and take photos, that it's just sort of like a reference point, sort of a starting sketch for what it'll end up being. Some of that stuff, I have my own personal line that I don't cross in Photoshop. It doesn't matter where your line is, as long as you're comfortable with your own personal line. It's like having your own personal El Guapo. Like, for example, Nicole is cool swapping out one sky for another sky. I don't actually ever do that. I always keep the sky that's really there. Because for me, it's just a slippery slope. Because once you start replacing a sky, you could replace anything and so on and so forth. And I don't know where I would ever stop if I did that. But I will composite. Obviously, HDR, that's all it is. It's compositing on the pixel by pixel level with some tone mapping. And then I will do other color treatments and cross-processing and those sorts of things. That's kind of my own take on it.
I hear you, Trey. I'm actually a very, I guess, a naturalist. I don't know if that's the right word. When it comes to photography, like, I don't really even do HDR, not because I don't appreciate it. I just, maybe I'm just too lazy. I just like to get it as much in camera. You know, nice ND grad filter will do the job, right?
I was surprised, Nicole, when I saw you dropped the sky. That was the last thing I thought I was going to see today, was you replace the sky.
Yeah, I don't do that. That's why, I did that yesterday. You know, that's why it's like such a big step for me, because I never do that.
Brian's rubbing off on you.
Yeah, he is.
Wait a minute.
So I find myself, I think, Trey, you started to allude to this, but lately I find myself experimenting more with color. And, you know, like I would never do cross-processing and anything like that. And lately I don't know what it is, but I'll find, you know, I don't know what you guys use. I use a cross between Perfect Effects or Nick Color Effects. But I'll just kind of start like clicking through the presets rather than doing a bunch of stuff in Photoshop, just because it gives me like, it kind of gives me that visual starting point. I get to see like a ton of different effects. I know this isn't a post-processing hour, but.
I do that. I actually make my own presets. I use the presets that were made and then kind of adjust them slightly. And then for like Color Effects Pro 4, like you can save the recipes and, yeah. With photo effects, you can do the same type of thing to be able to play with different types of things. But I do the same thing. It gives me a further along starting point for what I might like to do.
So I think Derek's managed to share his screen. What do you got there, Derek?
Oh yeah, well, actually I like looking at this a lot better than me anyway. So this is so I shoot people. I mean that's the thing that I love. And the thing I just wanted to point out about this photograph and a lot of photographs that I shoot is the importance of the eyes. And whether you're really close and tight on the subject, or you're more mid-range like this, or you're further back, I talk a lot about this when I'm teaching too, is just really, really think. I start with the eyes, and then I work outward from that a lot of times. And I think that's just one thing I like to talk about in portraiture.
And you do it very well, I can see.
Thank you, sir. So right, I'm just going to leave this up because it's a lot better than me.
So, Trey, I know one of the things that you try and do every week is talk about Google Discoveries. Is that right? Do you want to introduce that?
Yes, Google Discoveries. Plus. Although I don't always like – that's kind of the name that's stuck, even though it's weird to say Discoveries when a lot of these people have already been discovered by tens of thousands of other people. But I find oftentimes that I have these blind spots in people that I should know. They just haven't appeared on my radar. And I figure that we all have blind spots because we're busy. So this is a great opportunity for people to take either well-known people that you should be following or lesser-known people that are just doing really interesting work that you might want to circle up. So we always like all the guests to come and bring their own discovery. I have mine, but maybe someone else could start out. How about Nicole? You always bring... Sweet internet gold. What do you got for us?
Sweet internet gold. All right, let me go ahead and get my share happening here. Okay, so my, see, that's probably good. My pick, my discovery is actually somebody I've known for a little while. I met him in Utah when I lived out there a few years back. His name's Jeremy Hall. He is a really great photographer, and he's also really involved in the community, especially the local community out in Utah. He's just a really nice guy, too. But he's caught my attention. You know, of course, I follow him on Google Plus. He's caught my attention because he's just had some really amazing stuff in his photo stream lately. And I think he's definitely worth a follow. His photos are very technically well-produced and very artistic. And he's, I'm sure if you were to ever comment on anything or ask him a question, he'd be able to, you know, he's just a really friendly guy. This one right here especially is probably one of my favorites of his most recent stuff. So his name's Jeremy Hall. I'll share one more image here of his because I really like it. It's a very beautiful portrait. So he's a good person. He only has 16,000 followers at the moment. So he's kind of, I guess, in that, it's a lot of people, but it's still like in the terms of Google Plus, it's really like, you know, it's still a small amount. So yeah, good person to follow.
Very good. All right. Colby, have you got somebody there?
I do. Let's see if we can go ahead and share the correct screen. This looks like it. There we go. That should pop up. All right. So my discovery for tonight's show is a guy named Ben Horn out of California. And I have the utmost respect for Ben, for a landscape photographer. He still shoots with medium format cameras, lugs these giant contraptions up to some of these pretty desolate locations, and gets some incredibly compelling work. He only has 3,500 people that have circled him on Google Plus, but he produces great work, and he has great behind the scenes videos that I highly recommend that you watch. He calls them kind of trip diaries, so he kind of documents his process every time he goes out anywhere. And let's see if we can pull up some of these. So this is like one of the most amazing shots that I've seen from the Badwater area of Death Valley National Park, and you know the water inside the salt formations that I've been striving to get for 8 years and still have not been able to get, and you know, beautiful lit sky. But long story short, he's just an incredibly talented photographer. I highly recommend that you guys check him out. And yeah, for anyone that carries that amount of weight, and I have a really heavy backpack whenever I go out into the field. I'm very impressed. So needless to say, I highly recommend you guys checking out Ben's work.
Very good. Matt, did you bring anybody along?
I did. She's got, here, let me go ahead and share here. She's got a decent amount of followers. So I might be doing a repeat here, but, Jesse looks like Eichendorp. And actually, just I just found her recently, but she's got 75,000 people in that have circled her. But I just found her recently, and the photo that I saw was this one, and it kind of just caught my eye right away. But she's got a lot of beautiful work.
Excellent. Who else? Nicole, have you got somebody to share? Oh, you did yours already. Derek, did you bring anybody to introduce us to?
I am so bad.
That's all right. That's well, I've got.
I did not do my homework.
All right, you're forgiven. We'll still invite you back, right, Trey?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem.
Yeah, he says that now. Then later on, he's going, no.
If I can figure out how to do this, I've got one. Let's see. We go back to screen share here.
Matt, you're still sharing the screen, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
And this will be a challenge. I want to see if I can share my second monitor. Let's see what that does. What happens if I do that? Well, it seems to have worked. Okay, now let me find a decent image here. This is a woman. I've only met her once. She has no idea I'm putting this on. Andrea Ewald. She's local here in the Bay Area, and I have just bumped into her on one photo walk, but for some reason her work just clicks with me. It's the kind of stuff I do, or the kind of stuff I would like to do. If I can figure out here, I'll go back to her page. See, can I click on her name? No, that didn't work. I'll click on that. Not moving.
You're already on her page.
I'm already on her page. I'll get to the top. Oh, I see. I have a scroll bar over there. That helps. It's behind the microphone. Anyway, Andrea, her top of the page shot isn't the best of her dog. But anyway, she just does great abstract stuff during street photography and things like that. But I really like it. And I suggest you check out Andrea. She's only got about 10,000 followers. So she's more or less a newbie in there. Trey, who you got for us?
Let me share my screen here. This guy is Fantastico. He's a Japanese gentleman. His name is Hanky Cointjoro. Can you see my screen okay?
Yes, we can.
Wow. Okay, so this is just one of his galleries. It's called Mist. This guy's amazing, and I don't shoot a lot of black and white. Well, that's not true. I do. I just don't show much of it because it's not as good as this guy's. But this guy, I mean, he makes me want to shoot a lot more black and white. He's just incredible. I'm getting the floating beach ball here. I want to scroll down and show you some more. You know they're going to be good when the tiny thumbnail is amazing. You know, that's always a good sign. If your jaw drops at a little 100 by 100 pixel thumbnail,
right?
You know you're in for something good. And look at this. Look at these four horses going through the mist. What's going on? Who is this guy? He's incredible. And, you know, gosh, it's just sort of beyond words. So everybody should circle this guy up. So I know these names are hard to catch, especially with my bad pronunciation of that Japanese word. I probably insulted many generations of his family, so I'm sorry. But we will plus mention all these people when I reshare this this video. I think it gets pretty much immediately encoded on YouTube now. But I'll reshare it on my stream tomorrow or the next day. And okay. Dave Beffer, our producer here, is making careful notes, and we'll be sure to plus mention not only everyone in the Hangout, but all of our Google Plus discoveries too. Before we go here, I want to plug Twit Photo tomorrow. That's another show on Leo's Twit Network with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte. Their guest tomorrow is who, Dave?
Eddie Tapp.
So tune in for that one. All right, Doug. Anything else before we wave goodbye to everybody?
No, Trey, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to set up the show and invite my amazing guests, and appreciate that all of them said yes. I'm so glad you made it here. Thanks to everybody. And I'll let you close out the show, Trey.
Okay, well, no, thank you, Doug. You did all this hard work and all the preparation. I'm just, you know, Rancho Relaxo here on a hammock. I appreciate you very much, and thanks, everyone, for coming. It was a great discussion. I really enjoyed it. And we will do it again sometime. All right, so now, like we do every week, just kind of wave goodbye from your little quadrant of the internet.
Thanks.
See you next. That was sort of a Fidel Castro wave, wasn't it? I should get more upright. I'm not used to having my elbow embedded in the hammock.
Here's the queen.
Okay. Bye, guys.